Erie, Ontario, New York State, the Empire State. In podcast 1006, the Bob Davis Podcasts. I am not in Manhattan, down in the southern part of New York. I'm in what they call upstate. Nobody really knows where the dividing line is, but basically it's way up north on the shores of Lake Erie and ultimately Lake Ontario here in New York State, in the middle of probably one of the most ridiculously intense downpours I've ever experienced. And I have been all over the country and I've been in a lot of rainstorms. You can probably hear it hitting the roof of Mobile Podcast Command late at night. There is nothing to do in this campground but sit in your trucks or your tent or your camper or whatever and listen to the rainfall. So that is what we're doing in podcast 1006, upstate New York, the Empire State, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, I really appreciate donations when I am in transit, because the donations fuel the vehicle for the most part. And I just want to thank Jason for $25. If you want to make a donation to the Bob Davis Podcast to support these trips, all you got to do is go to thebobdavispodcast.com, look for the picture of Mobile Podcast Command. You're going to see a thing that says donate. Click on that, takes you to PayPal. You can do whatever you want to do at that point. And I appreciate it. And thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on iTunes and subscribing on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Also streaming, all that good stuff. Now, when we talk about streaming and we talk about connectivity, you know that connectivity is a big bugaboo with me in travels. I've had all kinds of things that I've done to try to improve my connectivity. I have a WeBoost in this truck, which really works only for voice and for texting. It doesn't help with data, and I'll explain it. The WeBoost actually crimps data, and I don't know how it does it, but I know that it does it. So I have a new solution from Privacy Post. So Privacy Post is a company that's doing a lot of things, and you're going to hear about a lot of things that they're going to do. I'm going to focus on the connectivity capabilities that Privacy Post has shown me and that I'm using here on the road. So right now in this pouring down rain, I can surf at cable speeds, meaning it's like being at home. I just uploaded a podcast recently on this system, and it was amazing. It was like zoop right there. Never done that on a hotspot. No matter how much service I had from AT&T, it didn't matter. So what happens is Privacy Post will tailor a solution for you. They will get you a box. You will be able to connect at cable speeds. The best thing about the box that I have is it has a VPN in it, which means I am online completely anonymously. So they're very secure. Privacy Post security is their business. The guy who runs it is a digital nomad and is very security conscious. So if you're a doctor, if you're a lawyer, if you are someone who wants to be private, this is the way to do it. And I don't care if you're in a campsite and you want to use the Wi-Fi from the state park or the camp company, whatever the campsite is, you can do that. You can use the Wi-Fi at your neighbor's house when you visit them or your friend's house. And you can use any of the major providers. Privacy Post will tailor make a solution for you. So you RV people, you van life people, you digital expats, all of you digital nomads can improve your life with a really great internet connection, regardless of where you are. So far in this mission to test this system out. So I'm pretty excited. If you want to hear more, if you want to learn more about Privacy Post, check them out online at Privacy Post. And to get to their website, just click on the Privacy Post banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Yeah, it's kind of neat to be sitting here late at night, the rain pouring down, and have the lights on, you know, real subdued in sort of a, you know, kind of a, it feels like a studio. But at the same time, I can't get away from this sound of the rain falling. So it's going to be a significant part of this podcast. I don't know how long it's going to go on. It might sound to you like white noise. So if it does, put some headphones on so you can really get a sense of what we're dealing with here. It has been raining, raining, raining. And tonight, I was coming across from Ohio all the way up into New York State through Buffalo today, all the way over to Rochester, and finally found this campsite. So I've gone all along the Lake Erie shore over to Lake Ontario, finally found this campsite because I could see on the radar that we were going to get heavy rain. And I thought, I don't want to be on the road during this heavy rain. So I decided to just grab a campsite. And I haven't really seen much of it because I've been sitting in the truck as it rains. It's crazy. I love going someplace I've never been. And I have never been to northern New York State. Years ago, I came to Buffalo for something, but we flew in and flew out. It was winter, and I didn't get to see these amazing, wineries, these amazing farms right up here on the edge of the lake, Lake Erie. And then the really, in my opinion, the pace de resistance of these upper Great Lakes, Lake Ontario. So I've lived close to these huge expanses of fresh water most of my life. And I'll tell you, they're not called the Great Lakes for nothing. You know, grew up on Lake Michigan in Chicago, obviously spent a lot of time in Minnesota, Lake Superior in Minnesota. One of my favorite trips, I'd have to say, was a trip I took last summer. I went, this is before I decided to sell everything and go on the road. In fact, it was one of the trips that really solidified the deal for me because I didn't want to come home. I went up to Michigan's Upper Peninsula with the other side of Superior. So in Minnesota, we're used to the western side or the northern side of Superior. When you come around the other side of Superior, you're on the southern edge and the northern edge of Lake Michigan. So for me, it was a complete experience because I grew up on the southern edge of Michigan, and the Upper Peninsula has all this maritime stuff going for it, as well as mining. In a sense, very blue collar, but very much in some ways like northern Minnesota. It's just a great, this whole Great Lakes region, specifically in the summer, is really something to see if you can. And I went to the UP. You know, I've been to the UP in the fall, and I have been to the UP in, I guess it was late summer. Maybe even, it may have been, I don't know. Yeah, it was late summer. It was late August, early September this time. Maybe the other time I was there, it was fall, like October. I don't remember. So I've plied these highways so much that sometimes I don't remember where I've been or what time of the year it was when I was there. So love the UP. So now I've had the benefit of kind of the whole Great Lakes experience. If you're not from the Midwest, if you're not from upstate New York, if you're not from the Upper Peninsula, if you're not from Ohio, you know, listen to the last podcast, I talk about riding along the shores of Lake Erie. And of course, let's not forget Huron and Erie now and Ontario. And one of the things that I love about this trip is this really is the Industrial Revolution history tour in reverse. And so now we are in the Empire State of New York. And I gotta say, there's another New York, which really encompasses an awful lot of geography of the state of New York that nobody really ever thinks about, and that is upstate. And people from around here will tell you they're from upstate. They'll make that distinction so you understand. One of the things that's really cool about upstate New York, obviously Manhattan was the capital of the United States for a while. It was also occupied during the Revolutionary War. So upstate New York has a lot of Revolutionary War history, as well as really the War of 1812, and a rich Native American history as well, which I'm going to talk about a little bit. And the thing that sometimes people forget, because it's the Great Lakes, they forget that there's a great maritime history in this area. And so when you hit these towns like Buffalo and Rochester, and other even smaller towns along the way, you are also kind of doing the Industrial Revolution thing in reverse. If you remember the last podcast, I talked about, I'm fascinated with the whole history of the Industrial Revolution because it's the 20th century story what some call the second industrial revolution. The first industrial revolution really was this thing in Pawtucket, the fabric mill, or whatever you want to call it, that was built in Pawtucket, and then that spread the first industrial revolution up the valley through Massachusetts and all through that region. This part of the country was mostly Native American for a long time, although it had been explored in 1624 or thereabouts. You got these great names up here, and there's gravitas to this feeling. People have come along these shores. They have built great cities for almost, well, almost 300 years. And you've got these great Native American historical names that really are such a huge part of our history. Iroquois, Mohawk, Oneida, Cayuga, Seneca, Mohican, to name a few of the great tribes. There's others, obviously. And many of the product names, Oneida, the Oneida Colony, all of these names, Seneca, there's Lake Seneca, and all these places that are essentially named after Native Americans in some way, shape, or form. This part of the future United States and really this part of the of Native American culture was, this was once the Iroquois Confederacy. It's kind of outlined in the movie The Last of the Mohicans, or you can just read the book. The other thing is that New York has this rich history of the Dutch and Fort Orange all the way up to, and Manhattan, and all the way up today. So yeah, the great names that I've mentioned. I don't intend to do some kind of historic travelogue. I just want to tell you how it feels, and I'll do that in the second half of this podcast. Another thing on the road that drives me crazy is print cartridges, because when you stop to get print cartridges at some big box retailer, you pay through the nose, and that is why I hate my printer, okay? And the solution to this is Cartridge World. They can get you 30% off of those print cartridges compared to the big box stores. These cartridges from Cartridge World are guaranteed to perform as good as new. Free delivery on qualifying orders. I will tell you that some businesses can qualify to actually get a printer from Cartridge World. They are serving the universe. From Maple Grove, Minnesota, 763-420-6632. They're the only game in town. 763-420-6632. Or click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com that says, why pay more to print? I know there's a lot of people that travel with animals. They love animals, particularly dogs and cats. If you want to help them, listen up, because I'm going to tell you how to help them. Inspire and Flourish is a charitable organization that helps those who rescue dogs and cats and help animals in need. The agencies that do this need help, and Inspire and Flourish is there for them, because they need cages and blankets and beds and all the stuff, leashes, collars, all those things that dogs and cats need. They also, at Inspire and Flourish, Stephanie Fleming, who runs it, is out right now rescuing animals from overseas and Mexico and throughout the country. So she also does this work herself. Inspire and Flourish uses your contributions exclusively to help those creatures who love us the most, right? And there's so many people. Think of the people. I saw a story this week. People are getting dogs. During COVID, they got dogs because they were lonely, and now they're just dumping the dogs. It's terrible. Or their cat, they got a cat and they just dumped the cat. So yeah, these are essential agencies. Inspire and Flourish helps them. Send your tax-deductible donation to Inspire and Flourish by visiting inspireandflourish, it's all one word, .org, or click on their banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com. Well, as I said, I'm super interested in the Industrial Revolution history, and in particular, the older I get, the more interested I get in 20th century history. And the 20th century in this part of the country has to do with industry. There's just no mistaking it. From the Erie Canal and the inception of the Erie Canal, connecting it to the port of New York City, this is essentially what gave rise to what some have called the Second Industrial Revolution. And in addition to maritime, so the lakes, Lake Erie connected to Superior, connected to Michigan, connected to Huron, all the way over to Detroit and Chicago, and Duluth on the far northern edge of Superior, and then all the way east here with Canada and the St. Lawrence Seaway and Lake Ontario and all the history associated with it, upstate New York became a huge industrial powerhouse. And to me, it gives this area this history and this gravitas. But it also feels a little bit like New England, even though when New England was pretty much, I don't want to say pretty much settled, but more settled than this, this was part of the Western frontier. And you have these great cities like Buffalo, Rochester, Albany, Utica, Binghamton, Syracuse, and many more. And I'll tell you some stories. You know, I'm a radio guy. And when I started in radio, AM radio stations were just on the beginning of their decline. And often when a medium or a trend is about to decline, it's peaking. So when I grew up, AM radio stations were peaking. And then when I got into radio, obviously FM was beginning to grow, and we young radio guys would hang out and we would talk about all the great AM radio stations, and many of them were in this part of the country. And so there's an odd sort of emotional connection for me. I work for a guy named Bill Rust. Bill Rust helped invent the Norden bombsight. He became very wealthy, and at one point his accountant said, "You're making so much money, you need to do something with your money, or you're going to lose it because you're going to have to pay taxes." And so Bill Rust said, "What should I do?" So the story goes, and they said, "You should start doing something in radio." So he started building these panels that consolidated all of the transmitter controls and so forth that you would put in the control room so that the guy on the air could run the transmitter. Because in those days, that stuff was by no means self-controlled. You had to take meter readings, you had to see what was going on, and often the guy on the air had to get up and walk into the other room to take meter readings. Well, these panels allowed the guy on the air to take the meter readings from where he sat, and they were in a lot of radio stations. So then he made even more money. And his accountant said, well, he had asked his accountant, "What should I do with with all this money?" And the accountant said, "Why don't you buy radio stations?" So Bill Rust started buying radio stations, and he bought a boatload of them, as many as he could. And he owned the big radio station in Rochester. He owned a bunch of stations down in Pennsylvania, in the small markets in Pennsylvania, because he lived down there, and they all, of course, had all of his equipment in them. And I worked for one of his radio stations in Richmond, Virginia, and it was an interesting experience because he actually invented his own phone system. He didn't like the phone company, so he invented his own phone system. And I remember that station had his phone system in it. And if you didn't have an intercom, if you wanted to find somebody in the building, you picked up the Rust phone and you called. And it's so, I don't know how to explain it, but it's so mid-century America. It's so 1940s and 50s and so industrial. And it makes me think of, well, for one thing, this is where the real Tesla did all of his experiments. In upstate New York, you had General Electric, IBM, Kodak, Xerox, and hundreds of other companies that really were household words during the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, and 80s, until the quote-unquote decline of industrial output in America, which don't even let me talk about that because there's some arguments there. There's two sides to that story. But I should also mention that this area of the country has a very rich agriculture because of the climate. Very cold winters with lots and lots of snow. It is absolutely verdant, very green, all kinds of hardwood trees, all kinds of farms. And when you drive along 20 all the way up across into Lake Ontario, where you get on Route 18 above Rochester, it is, I don't know how to describe it. These farms and these places, these coastal areas are gorgeous. and they're so well put together. There's a lot of Mennonites and Amish up here, and of course, their farms look like movie sets. It's just worth seeing. And if you like wine, there's a ton of wine manufacturers here. What have you called? Wineries. And I don't drink, so I don't know what you call it. But some of these places, these are some of the oldest wine growing areas or grape growing areas in the United States. It goes back to before the Revolution, because of course they drank a lot of wine back in the day. And to a Midwestern boy, even though I was raised in the crucible of manufacturing, Chicago, it's a different feel. It feels kind of Midwest, but it also feels a lot like New England. It feels. I went through towns, Hilton, New York, yesterday. It's like a movie set. I actually called my son and said, "This is a movie set. This is like the scene where the leaves are falling at the beginning of the movie, and the people are smiling and happy, and they're walking their babies in their baby carriages, or they're doing something like that, and it's just this perfect upstate New York kind of feel to it. I can't explain it, but it really takes me back to, the 20th century. There's nothing else I can say about it. So yeah, this was and became an industrial center. It's always been an agricultural center. I mentioned the winemaking. And all these small towns, Olcott, which seems to have been built in the 1890s, around there. Watertown, Niagara Falls, who can forget Niagara? The name Niagara is enough. Everything feels very prosperous as well up here. You can drive through different parts of the country. And a lot of times when you're on the interstate, you see Cleveland from a different perspective. Cleveland or Rochester can look pretty run down. And admittedly, I got lost in Rochester, and it got me. One of the things that confused me is when you get into these little hooks around the lakes, if you're on a back road, so when it says east, it's actually leading away from the lake. When it says west, it leads toward the lake. I don't know why that is. I have to actually think about it, and I don't want to, but I got lost in Rochester, and there's some pretty rough areas of Rochester. Same with Buffalo, same with Cleveland. But when you get out into these areas and you travel on the back roads, you also see the other side of that. And I think all too often we have been taught, and I certainly, since I had never been here before, I had this image in my head of this sort of rotted industrial area of the country, and it is not like that so far, not up by the lakes. One of the things that I had an experience where I kind of came around a bend, and again, I'm on two-lane roads, and they're excellent roads up here, and I see this general store in a building that probably goes back to the 1840s, and it looks like a movie set. I had the same experience in California, and a lot of those places actually are movie sets in California, but I don't think they're movie sets here. They just look like that. Whole towns look like that. Now, I haven't gotten to the Finger Lakes region, really. If you look on a map, you can sort of see them. They're south of Rochester, and then moving over, you can see the Finger Lakes. I'm going to be going to the Adirondacks, and then across over to Burlington, Vermont. And, you know, people have said to me, "God, I'm so glad you're going to New England, because there's so much history there and so many things to see." And there are. As a rule, I have not toured a lot of historical places. There's a lot of stuff here from the War of 1812. If you go on 12, once you get east of Rochester, you're going to encounter a lot of 1812 stuff. Lake Champlain. These are all scenes of maritime battles in 1812. And a lot of the war was fought up here. They tried to employ Indian tribes in various roles. In addition, that had been going on since the 1760s with the British and the French. So this whole region back in the day saw quite a lot of fighting. And then there's just all these small towns, and I don't have enough time to go to all of them. I don't have the time to go down into all of these places in the Finger Lakes. I'm probably going to come back through Massachusetts, so I won't see them. Those are all places to go yet. But I have to say, my mental impression of New York was more Rust Belt than it actually is. It's really a cool place. You could do a lot worse. And I'm actually gonna compare this to Northern Minnesota or even the Upper Peninsula. In summary, so I've been to Northern Minnesota many times. As a rule, I'm not a fan because it's usually too cold up there for me and too wet in the summer. Now, I know that there's this incredible period of time that everyone talks about in Minnesota in August. If you go up there, it's great, blah, 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 blah. I went up there once in August and froze my ass off. So let me just say this, aside from the cold, which, you know, some people love that and that's fine. So Northern Minnesota and the Upper Peninsula have this sort of frontier feeling. And it certainly is that way in the Upper Peninsula until you get down into the Maritime region. You get down into Western Lake Michigan area, the far western shore of Michigan to Lake Michigan. You start to get into this heavy maritime history, the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, for example, and then further back as well, because they plied those lakes. There would be no steel without the taconite in Northern Minnesota and in the Upper Peninsula. And those people would not have been able to get it out of the ground without the experience of the miners that came from Wales and Cornwall, I think it is, England. And on the Minnesota side, the so-called Bohunks, the Eastern Europeans and Italians who went to Northern Minnesota to work in the mines. So mining, maritime, that's the kind of industry that you find in Northern Minnesota and in Northern Michigan. A little bit more when you get towards Ypsilanti and places like that over on the Huron side. Now you're getting into a little bit of industry in Michigan and it sort of feels more eastern than Minnesota. I will just say this. So Minnesota, Western Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, these were frontiers in the early 1800s. And even in the mid 1800s, they were really not inhabitable for most people. You had to be pretty tough to live, and especially Minnesota, you had to be pretty tough to live up there. And it still has that feel, okay? And it's great. But then when you come here, it has this... It's been settled since, 1820 or something, especially the further east you go. And so it has this feel of permanence. It has this feel of history that it's kind of like Virginia. It's kind of like North Carolina. It's kind of like Maryland. But it's different because it has that sort of industrial feel. And I feel like upstate New York really came into its own in the so-called Second Industrial Revolution. The Erie Canal, all these rivers, the lake trade, and all the things that went on there. And now it's kind of this resort area. So I'm going on to Adirondack, the mountain, which is, I'm told, it is the largest state park in the United States. It's bigger than Yellowstone and Glacier and a couple of other national parks put together. That's how big the Adirondack Park is, or Adirondack Mountains. And then I'm going over to Vermont. But, you know, aside from the pouring rain, which, again, you're on the East Coast, essentially, and this is the remains of that hurricane that is still breaking up and pouring. It's really, you listen to it. It's ridiculous. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to end it here because I really don't like to do travelogue podcasts because it's really about the feel for me. I don't go to the diners. I don't go to the historical places unless it's right by the road and I can pull in. I don't necessarily do that stuff that some people do, because you'll be stopping every mile. You can't do that. I like to kind of drive through and just get the feel, because I'll be back, you know, and I'm just trying to get the feel of upstate New York and where it would want to be and how it would be. People say, what do you think you'd ever settle down and where would you settle down? Well, you could do a lot worse than upstate New York. Let me tell you, I have no idea what the tax structure is in upstate New York. That's not the subject of these podcasts. I really don't care. I don't plan on living here. But if you had a lot of money, or if you had the wherewithal, or if you had family property up here, I think it'd be pretty cool. My preference is the West. I really like the West, and I love to drive west. So it's kind of neat to find a place in the East that really appeals to me. I love these lakes. They are, you remember when I used to talk about, I went down the East Coast to try to find the weather-beaten cottage on the shore, right? Well, that weather-beaten cottage is actually on the shores of Lake Ontario and Lake Erie, depending on where you are. Really beautiful places. Some of which are for sale. I don't know how much they want, but you can literally, and oh yeah, that's the other thing. I just want to say this very quickly. I've passed a lot of blue-collar neighborhoods that actually front onto these lakes, Lake Erie, especially over by Cleveland and further east. You know, just working man neighborhoods where you could get a ranch house with a garage and look out over the lake back in the day. It's fascinating. So I can't wait to see more, and we will head on east after the rain quits. I'm going to get up into the front of the vehicle right now, and I'm going to start the truck just to recharge the batteries a little bit. I'm a little bit worried about all this rain. Can you believe this? It's just, this has been going for like 3 hours. Wouldn't be a podcast for me without a shout out to 36 Lynn, the independently owned and operated community-focused refueling station at 36 and Lindale Avenue in the Lynn Lake neighborhood in Minneapolis. They are totally down with the community. They're doing their best to help things get squared away in that neighborhood after the whole George Floyd thing. Not only are the guys at 36 and Lynn refueling out to help the community, they feature a great selection of locally sourced products in the store, which is so important these days. Got great coffee. They've got all kinds of great candy and food and stuff like that, as well as great prices on fuel. Because they're an independently owned and operated refueling station, they can pass the savings on to you. It's one of the reasons they are so busy. Check out their Instagram feed. It's awesome. Remember, 36 and Lynn, next time you swing through Minneapolis, you need gas or a cup of coffee. And for more information and great 36 Lynn events, check them out online at 36lynn.com or click on their super modern, awesome banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Finally, the EAA Air Show is on. I will not be going this year, but if you're going and you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, go to Building C, find Alpha Systems, talk to Mark Korn, listen to Mark Korn as he describes why angle of attack indicators are so important to civil aviation. They've had them in the military for years. It tells you how much lift your wing is producing, and it helps not have an accident. These AOA problems, angle of attack problems, are the leading cause of accidents in civil aviation, and Alpha Systems fixes that. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. Go to EAA. They will be in Building C. Check them out. Say hi to Mark Korn. All right, let's start this thing up. And what I'm doing is I start the engine up, charges the batteries, get a little heat in here because it's kind of cold. It's been raining all day, and it's a little windy out there. And you can hear it's a different, you know, now it's on aluminum in the back, and up here it's on steel. Listen to this rain. Kind of relaxing, actually. Thanks for listening to podcast 1006, live from the Empire State, upstate New York, the true Empire region, I'd like to say. Podcast 1006, the Bob Davis Podcasts.
Put a candle in the window. Drift.